The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
This is Amanda LaPlante. You're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. With me today is Dr. Emily Hecker. Dr. Hecker is a graduate of Logan College of Chiropractic, certified nutritional consultant, has her MBA, and is the owner of Enlightened Functional Medicine in Baldwin, Missouri. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Amanda. I'm super excited to be here today with you.
I am so excited to talk with you. You and I have not gotten to really sit down and just connect, and right. I hear so many great things about you and your practice. I cannot wait to pick your brain.
Well, I'm excited to be here and dump my brain and just get to know you more.
We've got histamine intolerance, MTHFR, and several other awesome topics to dive into today.
And they so interrelate and interconnect with each other. So they're interwoven. So whatever one we go, we can tie some other pieces together with it.
Well, first, let's do this. Let's start with your story of how you got into functional medicine. Okay. What brought you into that field?
My undergraduate is actually in meteorology. I'm a science nerd, so I love science, but God was leading me on a totally different path. Now, I got my undergrad in meteorology and then decided and I'm a pilot too, so I have this aviation underlying. I know, it's totally random. And when I was finished with college, I was 23 years old or so, and I wanted to do something with my health. I had a desk job. I decided to run a marathon, which was totally out of my character because I'm a science, but I show choir. I have this artsy side too. Did that piece and really fell in love with the health piece of it and decided I want to actually dive into more the health route instead of the science, but it's still science, right? Decided to go to Logan College of Chiropractic for chiropractic. I had a back injury, not an injury, just sitting at a desk all day long, and it helped me with that. So I went to Logan College of Chiropractic and found a mentorship with another local doctor that specialized in functional medicine, and I didn't know what it was. And I'm like, this sounds cool. They find the root problem of the health issues, and they dive into it with diagnostic testing and supplementation and lifestyle changes. And I'm like, that's me.
Was that the first time you had heard of approaching things that way?
Yes, it really was. And the cool thing was when I was working in that office as a student, I would see people come in, they've been to the Mayo Clinic, they've been so many other places, but they never got the full story and the answers that they need. And people would walk in and then they'd walk out a few months later transformed. And that's what got me.
It's so fascinating to me. And I have to say I just shared with you kind of my story and what brought me into what I do now as well. And it's so interesting to me to look back and think, wow, we kind of have this backwards, don't we?
I know.
You know, medicating the symptoms and just trying to make people comfortable versus really getting to that root cause. The human body is such an amazing machine.
Mm-hmm. It sure is.
Designed to heal.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you have had not necessarily your own personal health journey, but you've also seen how this functional approach can affect some of your loved ones in their health journeys. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's a lot that I see and especially inspires me to do what I do. One of them is my immediate family, my mom, her family and her side, they have multiple autoimmune diseases. And actually just recently this past weekend, she was hospitalized for pulmonary embolism. She almost didn't live on Thursday. Major clots. And so what I do every day inspires me to make the right choices in food because I know a lot of it is genetic. So there's a hereditary piece of in there and I do what I do. I have two boys. I have a 6 and a 7-year-old. And so I know I feed them a specific way because I know genetically they're more predisposed to it with the stress. So my mom inspires me. My 6-year-old son, we recently did some testing on him, awesome testing, and found out that he's really sensitive to gluten. And I'm like gluten light mom. I don't buy gluten bread in the house. I'm like a pretty on top of it, except occasionally we might go out and have some pizza. You know, my husband might take him out. Anyway, we did the test. He is so lit up on his celiac and his gluten markers. He was getting motor tics where he would blink his eyes a lot, and then he would clear his nose. He would start shrugging his shoulders. He's six. And so after we removed the food source that was causing his immune system so much damage, start healing the gut with the products that I use. And in 6 weeks later, you should see his skin is better. His ticks are gone. So it's really neat to see it in action in your own home.
Yeah. We struggle with that at my home a bit as well. Mm-hmm. I have a 12-year-old, almost 13, and it's hard to be that mom that knows better, right? Especially with my particular autoimmune susceptibility and gluten issues. And we've done a lot of genetic research and different things on him to mm-hmm. dive in and see, okay, what are his susceptibilities? And, you know, we've got some little things that he's already dealing with even at his young age. And we've been through some of the tics and the neurological things. He actually mm-hmm. had been diagnosed with PANDAS okay. a few years back. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting to see how gluten can interact with somebody's neurology.
Right.
In addition to all of those other potentially dirty genes.
Right.
Can you tell a little bit more about that though? We haven't really talked about gluten on the show, and we won't dive too far in, but just really drive home that point that if somebody's experiencing neurological issues, anxiety, mm-hmm. depression, things like that, there is a connection with the gluten potentially.
Right. Yeah. There's science behind this. That's why I like this area of medicine, because it's so driven by literature and the science. And there's connections with gluten that tears apart. I'm going to get a little sciencey on you. Things called zonulin, which is kind of like the duct tape in between the cells. And when people consume gluten, it can tear apart that duct tape lining, that duct tapes those cells together, and cause more of a leaky gut or intestinal permeability, whatever fancy term you want to use, or just call it, hey, we got some holes going in the gut. And what can happen is it damages the tissue. So just like if you think of stress, I like to think of it in this terms, stress, you often think of stress ulcers, right? Some people, usually it's thought about in men, you know, if they're working too much, they might develop more stress ulcers. And that thins the lining of the tissue, and it causes ulcers. And that's when you go to your GI doc and they'll do scoping and see that. Well, it's just happening that way. It's causing the degradation of the tissue, but it's not getting to the point where people are bleeding. It's getting to a more subclinical level where there is some destruction going on, and it's causing these cytokines to go into play and for things to cross the blood-brain barrier and cause the neurological issues with it.
And I'm starting to hear the term leaky brain thrown around.
Yes, and there's different barrier systems of the body. So we have the digestive system that many people are more familiar with. We also have the skin. That's a barrier system that, think of it, if we get a cut, we want to take care of it. We don't want an infection going on. We have the lungs, which are also another barrier system. We have the brain, which is that leaky brain, especially when you're dealing with vaccinations, immunizations. We want to make sure that blood-brain barrier is nice and intact. And then the last thing that we have is the placenta barrier. That's also a barrier that we can talk more into, especially with the histamine piece, because that produces an amazing enzyme that helps degrade histamine. The placenta produces a massive amount of it with that piece, but it's a barrier system. So we got to make sure when we are pregnant or becoming pregnant or trying to, we want to make sure all those barrier systems are intact.
All right. Well, let's talk about histamine intolerance then. Let's dive into histamine.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah, so where would you, okay, now this is kind of a big topic.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Where does one begin, Dr. Hecker?
That is so true. And you know, it's funny because the histamine piece really I started seeing it more clinically in my office. I didn't know what it was. I didn't just have this miraculous histamine personal journey. I just observed when patients would come in my office. Usually they're coming into me with MTHFR, genetic defects. They're more chronic and they're educated. So they're coming into me with a little more known things, but they're seeing random specialists. They're seeing a neurologist. They're seeing a gastroenterologist. They're seeing a dermatologist, and they're random symptoms. So how it started for me was seeing these random symptoms and trying to figure out what's going on. How can these be connected? And that's when I started seeing some commonalities with it, just symptom-wise. A lot of sneezing, a lot of sinus, a lot of itchiness in the skin, even headaches that go along with it, redness in the skin, hives. Those are some typical things that outwardly can identify, but then it gets into some other different symptoms as well with that. So that's how I started seeing the picture with the histamine, was just the symptoms they started presenting with. And then I started digging deeper. And then my practice really dove into more histamine for probably about a year and a half. I just was like working with the histamine. There's foods that are more higher in histamine.
I've run into this with some of my clients where mm-hmm. they're like meal prepping and thinking they're doing this great thing. And it is a great thing. It's a great habit to get into. But whenever you're dealing with the histamine intolerance, as mm-hmm. food ages and sits in the fridge, histamine levels go up in the food. So we've got to make some adjustments and be freezing the food or doing certain other things. Yes. So talk more.
Yes, about the food piece, especially with that, because when we think of histamine, it degrades. Those specific foods, when it degrades more, it really degrades more of the histamine piece and causes more inflammation in the body. So when we have that going on, then we know that we want to really support that degradation piece. And there's things that we can do naturally to help with the histamine breakdown and to adjust with the food, how we meal prep, all of those different things with the histamine.
So, all right. And talking about, I think a lot of people, you'd go back to the symptoms, right? If we go back to the symptoms of histamine intolerance, a lot of people are familiar with red wine. I might be tangenting a little bit, but this comes up a lot with people. They're like, oh, I just get a little bit flushed with the red wine. You know, I just kind of feel off. And they're really, that's also a symptom of histamine intolerance, correct?
Right. It can't, yes.
But we're talking something deeper and more chronic and broader. With-
yes. Yes. Even more deeper. So that's one sign that people, you can, your listeners can say, hey, when I drink red wine, how do I feel afterwards? Do I get a headache? A lot of us do, you know, when we drink that, even with the hangover that you might have. Or do I get a stuffy nose? Do I get a runny nose? Do I sneeze whenever I drink? And it doesn't have to be wine. It can be beer. You know, so ladies, pay attention to your husbands, you know, if it's happening to them or just yourselves. If do you, how do you feel when you have that? But that is something that is really known. There's more sulfites in red wine too. So there's a few other things. There's tryptamines as well that can cause headaches. But that's one thing to say, how do I handle my alcohol? If you're drinking alcohol, you may not be drinking alcohol at all. And there can be other triggers. Chocolate's a trigger. Spinach is a trigger. Fish is a trigger. There's some good healthy foods that we think, oh my gosh, I'm eating healthy, right? But then you eat these strawberries. You just think like Valentine's Day, chocolate covered strawberries. That's a healthier version of a sweet treat. But if you have these symptoms afterwards, there's things that we can do. And it's a sign that we need to help work with the gut, investigate if there's any type of pathogens involved with the release of the histamine that our body has. So we need to investigate if you have any infections. And you can test that in certain tests. You look for lipopolysaccharides, which is something that you can test for specifically as well. And we avoid those foods that are higher histamine. If you avoid those foods and you still find that you're having those symptoms, what comes next, right? Because I work with a histamine-free diet with a lot of my patients. We got to dig deeper. I'm digging more into finding that mold, water-damaged buildings. If you live in a home or you work in a place, or if a lot of school teachers will live in and work in schools, and there's a lot of mold there. So that mold piece is a huge component that I'm finding with the histamine intolerance that people have.
Okay, so a correlation with mold and mycotoxins. And
yes.
Yeah, okay, yes. It would be the other word, right? What, whenever you've got a situation like that, I mean, that's major.
It's a big deal. And it's expensive and it's frustrating. But once you find out that, oh, wow, there's an answer. There's a reason why I'm having this. And I see clinically lots of siblings come in and they're dealing with histamine intolerance, super fatigued, can't tolerate school. Usually they're home, you know, they're just really chronic. Or whenever they work out, they might have histamine issues, get more runny nose, just feel lethargic. And you got to really be a good investigator to say, okay, well, how do you feel when you leave the home? You know, when you leave your house, how do you feel? If you go on vacation, you know, for a week, how do you feel there? If you you remove yourself from that specific environment.
Yeah, starting to think of that environment as the trigger and really making that mindset shift to be conscious and observant of how that's affecting
right.
you. That makes sense. What is your advice for someone who might be dealing with a situation where it's, you know, their place of employment, their school, something like that, that seems to be the trigger? How in the world do you go about resolving that issue?
Right, that's a tough one because you have the outside trigger that could be the environment that you're working in, it just making its way into your body. Now, something you can do is you can work on cleaning your body up so it can detox properly and get rid of these mycotoxins that are being produced. And when we say mycotoxins and or biotoxins, what happens in the mold, we inhale the spore, it goes and typically lands in our sinus cavity because that's where we're breathing it or where else in the body. And that spore produces, it's why it's called bio because it's living, it produces toxins. So it's a living thing, creature
so,
that continually produces toxins.
So not just your home or your place of employment or your school is infected, right?
Right.
With these toxins, but you could actually have these in yourself. I have heard of cases where people have removed themselves from a place that they had rented when they were younger or whatever, and 20 years later, they're still having these chronic sinus infections and other issues. So this can really be living in their body.
Right. And you can be out of the environment. That's the tricky thing. You could have exposed this to grandma's basement when you were 13, and now you're 27 and you're dealing with this, but then you look back at, and that's the beautiful thing about functional medicine, is it looks at the big picture and it says, okay, on your timeline, when did they start, you know, or was there a trigger? Did you lose a bunch of body fat? Because I see that as well, because fat stores toxins and hormones, especially estrogen. When you lose a good amount of fat, because you're working with a health coach or whatnot, and you start getting bad symptoms again, I see this clinically happening in my patients too. So we need to bind up these bad boys that are coming out of our fat cells so they don't recirculate and cause more damage in the tissue.
And how are you doing that? How do you go about that?
It's a big process, but one of the things I love to use that anyone can use and try, and it's very safe, is a binder. I love charcoal. You might have heard of charcoal, and yes, it is charcoal. It's black, but it helps bind things up to it. But when you take charcoal, make sure you're working with a practitioner first.
And we're talking about activated charcoal. For anybody that's picturing their barbecue pit and thinking they're going to go hit that up,
please,
not the same.
Yes, please don't eat your charcoal from your barbecue pit. But it is derived from a similar source with that. But you do want to go to medical grade. Work with your practitioner on this. But charcoal binds up the bad things, especially think of it like debris. Like if you had a big tornado just come and swipe through your body, you have all this debris that you need like a vacuum cleaner, come and suck up and bind to that so you can poop it out. So the charcoal is definitely something that I like to use in my practice. What I see is that people who respond good to charcoal typically might have a mold issue, and it's a good cheap diagnostic way of looking at things. So charcoal is a really good way to do it. Also working with decreasing the histamine. Why is there histamine? How is your gut? How is leaky gut? It's in the literature. If there's a lot of small intestinal damage, microvilli that's been damaged from stress, like the stress ulcers, or just bacteria, or you ate some bad food, all these different things can cause the damage, which then can damage that microvilli that lines the lining of the digestive tract, specifically that small intestine. And think of it like a grass. Think of it like your grass that you have to go mow. It gets nice and long, and we want that nice long grass in our guts, right? But what happens when we have so much stress, it gets mowed down. And at the very tips of that grass lives our enzymes, specifically diamine oxidase. Diamine oxidase is otherwise known as DAO. And this enzyme, think of it like Pac-Man, it gobbles up all the histamine that you eat. So when we have histamine issues, we need to be producing a good amount of Pac-Man or the DAO to gobble it up. And if your gut environment is not happy, you're not going to produce enough Pac-Man or DAO.
Okay, I love that analogy.
Me too.
I also just love Pac-Man. Are you a Mrs. Pac-Man or a Mr. Pac-Man?
Probably a
fan?
Mrs. I don't know. Mr.
Regular. It's not Mr. Pac-Man. It's just Pac-Man. But anyway, oh, very cool. All right, so let's double back to, did we talk about hormones and histamine, though?
No. But we need to.
Yeah, because that's important. I've noticed, especially with female clients, there are times that it tends to be worse. Tell me more.
Yes. So what happens is estrogen and progesterone are correlated with histamine. So when you have a rise in estrogen, it actually prompts the release of more histamine in your body. So think of it in terms of your cycle. You know, if you're female, when you're cycling, when are you going to have that surge of estrogen? Is it going to be around the ovulation time or right before you start your period? Think about PMS. Okay. How many of us women deal with PMS? And that PMS is going to be a big deal because we have the histamine and we have the rising estrogen. So And also think of it in terms of women who are approaching menopause. Typically, a lot of women have more higher levels of estrogen, making them more susceptible to these histamines. So someone like some of your listeners might be out there and maybe be approaching 50, 55, might be approaching menopause, and they're finding, now I'm having these sinus issues.
I run across that all the time.
You know, or now I'm having these skin breakouts. What's up with that? And it's because your hormones are shifting. And so your level of DAO, which is your Pac-Man, is not equaling the amount of histamine that your body produces.
So how can we get, is the goal to produce more DAO, right? Or is it to reduce the histamine, or is it a combination of both?
It's a tricky combination of both. We want to make sure we increase the amount of DAO, because a lot of histamine intolerance is an inhibition of DAO, meaning we don't make enough of it. So we need more.
And there are certain SNPs, right? So those polymorphisms within our DNA that can affect how much we can make in the first place or become dirty.
Yes.
Is that?
Yes. Yes, that is true. There's two specifics. We have genes that make enzymes. So genes make enzymes. And there's two enzymes that degrade histamine. One of them is diamine oxidase. That's our Pac-Man. Okay, so that's one of them. And then we have another one called HNMT. Histamine in methyltransferase. This one is, so they act kind of differently. So the DAO acts extracellularly. So whatever you consume in your body as food source, that's going to be the main one that is going to help degrade that histamine. That's your Pac-Man. So then we have this other one, HNMT, which is a gene that produces this enzyme. That one is intracellularly. So we have this whole mechanism of intracellular histamine degradation and extracellular histamine degradation that needs to be going on. And that one that happens intracellularly, the MT on the end of that, That stands for methyl transferase. That means we need to be methylating on top of things.
So that's a great place to segue into methylation.
Yes.
Okay, first off, explain methylation. Let's start there.
Yes. It's a process. It's a metabolic process that all of us go through. It's necessary and to really create more DNA. I see that, and there's a lot of different pieces that methylation is important. The major part of it happens in our liver. So we need our liver to be working really good. We need it to be getting rid of toxins properly. We need it to have the right nutrients to help with this whole process of making new DNA in more cells. We get a new gut every 7 days. That means we need DNA to make more cells. So if we don't have good methylation, that's not going to be ideal for our longevity and our healing.
Okay, so there are probably people listening right now that are going, wait a minute, DNA, that's your genes. You're born with that. You don't make more of that. How do you explain this to people?
How I tell people is you can't change your genes. That's what God gave you, right? You were born with it. Your mom and dad came. That's what you have. But we can't change those genes, but we can change how they function, which is called genetic expression. So we can change how those genes function. If we want to choose to speed them up a little bit faster, or if they're going too fast and we need to slow them down a little bit. And that's where the beauty of the functional medicine piece comes in, and really studying biochemistry and understanding that, oh, there are certain things that speed up the degradation, say, of histamine, since we're on the histamine piece. There's certain things that can help that. And those cofactors are B6, vitamin B6, as well as copper. And those things in general can really help that move faster in through our body. So we can't change genes. We can't, unfortunately, but we can change how they function.
So whenever we talk about genes and all of this good fun methylation stuff, we can't skip over MTHFR, because I think that's the elephant in the room that people are starting to be aware of.
Right, it is. And that's how I got started with this genetic piece about 6 years ago, I guess it was. And moms, I was doing craniopathy, since I am a chiropractic physician, looking inside their mouth. Mom would come in and say, hey, my newborn has some tongue tie issues. And oh, by the way, I have MTHFR. Then the next patient, same story. What's up with this? So I dug into MTHFR, and then I started seeing that, oh, well, you need more B9. You need more folate, because that's what, you know, we hear if we Dr. Google it or whatnot. Well, my client base is more sensitive. And so I was telling them this and finding that I was screwing up more people. It was making them worse.
Well, that's not what you want.
I know. So that's what made me dig in more with the biochemistry, getting into where I do and what I do today, because it's so much more than just giving someone a supplement. You got to look at how the body's working, how people's lifestyles are, what they're doing, what their hormones are, what their mindset is. All that goes into play with that. And MTHFR is just one start and one piece of that little puzzle.
Okay, so what is MTHFR for someone that's listening that has never heard of this before?
MTHFR is methyl transferase. So it is a gene. Once again, it's a DNA that helps make an enzyme. And that enzyme, methyl transferase, is going to help break down and absorb the B9 from our foods. And we need that. And a lot of women, you learn about this in medical school, that we need to have accurate amounts of folic acid. And this is where your listeners be like, wait a minute, if she's saying folic acid, and there's a big topic on that one.
Yeah.
With that. But what MTHFR is, a lot of us have this absent gene that doesn't allow our bodies to process the B9, the vitamin, from our foliage. That's why it's folate, from our leafy greens. And therefore, it causes issues with blood clotting, issues with mood, with miscarriage. There's so many pieces. Blood clotting, you know, there's all these different things that MTHFR, when someone has this missing enzyme, they can't function it right. So we can't give them the enzyme, unfortunately. We have to help it work better. And that's where we come in, bring in the right nutrients, remove the inflammation. That's where food comes in control. Bring in the right nutrients to help rebuild any tissue if the tissue has been damaged, and help people cope.
And I have to say, addressing that genetic issue for me has been completely and totally life-changing.
Great.
Really completely and totally life-changing. Prior to that, and I think it was multiple factors, right? You know, taking out gluten, cleaning up the diet, detoxifying, dealing with some other issues, right? Different layers. But my mood disorder that I had previously had, that went away. Anxiety, depression improved. Just a whole host of other physical symptoms also improved simply by addressing that particular genetic issue.
Right.
It was really nothing short of miraculous.
And think about it too, with MTHFR, that's happening in the liver. your liver clears all your hormones. You know, so we have all the hormones that we're producing, all the toxins when you're detoxing, because you're wanting to drink that green juice in the morning, or you're working on the detox piece. All of those toxins have to circulate through the liver, through the bile. They have to bind to something like fiber, which is why we need fiber in our diets, and then we poop it out. And so that is important, that we have the liver, the gallbladder working really well. And some of you might be thinking, well, I don't have a gallbladder anymore. What do I do now? And it just drips. It's like a faucet. It just kind of drips out the bile in there. And so we need to make sure with the bringing the MTHFR into the piece, the liver is such a huge organism. And if we're not doing all of those things, like you said you were doing that made you feel better, you're missing the piece of the puzzle. You just can't treat MTHFR just by giving a supplement.
And that is the beauty of this functional medicine mm-hmm. perspective and looking at the whole.
Yes.
So I would love for you to stick around for another episode. Or do you have time? Are
yes,
you willing?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. I am so glad that you can do that. Dr. Emily Hucker, thank you for joining me today. We've got to wrap this episode up. Let everyone know where they can reach out to you.
Yes, you can find me. I'm on social media. So you can find me on Facebook, Enlightened Functional Medicine. I am on Instagram too. And I'm at Dr. Emily STL, or just go to my website, enlightenstl.com.
Well, thanks again for joining me. This is Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRH LP 92.9 FM. For more information or to reach out with me, reach me online at amandalaplante.com or on facebook.com/getrealtoheal. For this and other episodes, you can find us on soundcloud.com/getrealtoheal. Make it a great day.